Welcome back to Seamwork Radio, where we share practical ideas for building a creative process so you can sew with intention and joy. Over the next 3 weeks, we have something extra special to share with you. So back in October, we hosted an event called Stitch Fest. Nearly 100 people gathered at Seamwork HQ, and we shared an afternoon together. We recorded a live podcast of Seamwork Radio. We hosted a pattern makers panel. We had a sample sale. We had a social hour. We had crafts. It was a total blast, and we met so many of you there. And it really just cemented our love for the Seamwork community and for our listeners. This week, we're going to share part one of Seamwork Radio Live recorded in front of a live audience at Stitch Fest. Haley ended up getting sick, so we brought in our lead pattern maker, Robin, for a great discussion on the most common sewing questions we hear. Be sure to tune in next week to hear part two, and the following week for our panel discussion with six different pattern makers. Welcome back to Seamwork Radio, where we share practical ideas for building a creative process so you can sew with intention and joy. Today, we're recording live from Stitch Fest. And this is the first time we've ever recorded the podcast live. I'm really excited to be here in Portland with 75 Seamworkers and most of our team. Thank you guys for being here. Unfortunately, Haley is out sick. We hope she feels better soon. Do you guys want to, on the count of three, say, get well soon, Haley? Yes. Okay, one, two, three.
Get well soon, Haley.
Thank you. I know she'll appreciate it. So in Haley's place, we have a special guest today. Robin's going to be co-hosting with me, and she is one of our pattern makers.
Hi, guys. I am so excited and a little nervous.
So Robin's our pattern development manager here at Seamwork, and she's going to help me out today with the live episode. So Robin has over 30 years experience in pattern making and has worked with brands like Patagonia, UGG, and Hannah Anderson. So we are very excited to have you here, Robin.
Thank you.
All right, so today we're going to be covering the seven most common sewing questions we hear and our answers, and it'll be great to have a pattern maker's perspective on those. We always start with an icebreaker, so today's icebreaker comes from Melanie R. And Melanie asks, we got a two-parter here. So Melanie asks, what me-made garment do you currently own that makes you feel the most fabulous? And then the bonus question is, what's the weirdest fabric you've ever used to sew a garment?
Okay, I had to look through my closet to figure that out.
I did too, yeah.
I feel pretty fabulous in this skirt.
You look
it's the
fabulous.
Pauline bonus. I think the me-made garment that makes me feel the most fabulous right now is this Axis dress by Paper Cut Patterns, and I made it in an emerald green raw silk from PDX Sewing Studio. Ooh. Thanks, Carlene. it's the perfect color. It really is, and I just feel really, really, like, special in it.
Aww.
And then the weirdest fabric, you know what? I don't think there is a really weird one. I did do, unless you count the halo I made for my Wonder Woman doll out of paper when I was 7. I stapled my finger. But other than that, no weird materials, but I did do my prom dress in like a red sequin fabric. Mm. And it gums up your needles a lot.
Yeah.
Just pro tip, change your needle often.
Yeah, sequins are tough.
How about you?
I think the one that makes me feel the most fabulous is the Chelsea jeans that I made recently, which I made in a corduroy. It's like a light blue corduroy. And I altered the leg a little bit. If you guys watch our YouTube videos, I made a whole YouTube video about it. And I just love those pants. They are so comfy. They make my butt look great. Thanks to you, Robin.
You're welcome.
She told me before I made them, she's like, they will make your butt look great.
They will. They will. By the way, I went to like 8 protos on that. So it happens.
And I love them. And I'm definitely going to be making them again. So I think that's it for me right now.
That's awesome. I have those on my sewing table.
Yeah.
Also with a wide leg.
You should definitely make them.
I should.
I think weirdest fabric. So when I was
like college age in my early 20s, I liked to go out dancing a lot, and I would make a lot of very strange clothing for that purpose. And I remember this, like, I lived in New York, and I would go to the garment district in New York, and there's, if you guys are familiar with it, Spandex House in New York, and they sell only spandex. And there was like this really crazy, weird, like holographic spandex that I bought and I made into a skirt. I think it was like a mini skirt or something. And that's probably the craziest fabric that I've ever sewn with. It was very odd looking.
It's fun for swimsuits.
Yeah.
I did one in like this, it was kind of like a shimmery green. I made a swimsuit in it last mm-hmm. summer, and all the ladies kept coming up to me telling me I looked like a mermaid.
Oh.
It was fun. And every time, thanks, I made it.
You know, actually, that reminds me of another spandex that I bought that had donuts. I don't know if you guys remember this. It had donuts all over it. You guys remember? Meg remembers. And I used it to make workout shorts. I thought that would be appropriate. Well, thank you for that question, Melanie R., the two questions. If you guys have an icebreaker for us, you can leave it on our community. If you're a Seamwork member, just go to seamwork.com/go/icebreakers. That's going to take you to a thread in our community where you can leave a question for us, and we will most likely use it on a future episode. So thanks again, Melanie. All right, so here at Seamwork, we get a lot of sewing questions, and we just get dozens of them every day via email and social media in our community. Lots of questions, and some of these questions come up again and again. So we're here today to answer some of those most asked questions for you guys.
All right, so we have some brave audience volunteers, including some of our amazing Seamwork ambassadors, who are going to read us the 7 questions.
And before we start, I just want to point out, these are not their questions. We wanted to make this clear. They're reading these for us. And you'll know why I say that when Emma asks our first question here.
I feel personally called out by this question. Trying not to take it personally. How do I make my projects look less homemade?
Oh, I love that one. Do you want to take the first one, Sarah?
Yeah. We have a whole episode about this question. It's episode 99 of the Seamwork podcast. So if you want to dive into this a little bit more, we talk about it there. But I'm going to start by channeling Haley, who's not here. Thank you, Robin.
I channel her every day.
Channeling Haley, she would say, number one is to pay attention to pressing. If you've listened to the podcast, you know Haley's fanatical about pressing, and I think for good reason. I think it really does make a huge difference in the final look of your garment. So a few things I'd recommend there. One is really taking the time with your pressing. The second is to invest in some pressing tools. So if you don't have things like a tailor's ham, a seam roll, a clapper, those are all really, really helpful and not very expensive tools that you can get that are really gonna improve the look of your garment. So that's one thing that I would definitely recommend that's cheap and easy. And it's actually, I enjoy pressing. I know Haley really enjoys pressing. I think those would be really wise investments of your time and money if you want to make your garments look less homemade. Another thing that I'd recommend, this is what made a big difference, I think, for me in my sewing, especially when I was first starting out, is really thinking about seam finishes. When I first started sewing, I didn't pay any attention to what the inside of my garment looked like, and I realized that I never really felt really good about how it looked in the end because it felt very homemade to me. And once I learned about seam finishes and really which seam finishes pair best with which fabric, which pattern, that really helped me to improve not just the look of my garment, but really how I felt about the garment when I would put it on, as well as the durability, which I think is really important as well. So those are some of the things. Another thing that I would say that is sometimes overlooked, but I think makes a big difference, is using high-quality interfacing. I think a lot of times we start out, especially if you don't live near a fabric store that really specializes in garment fabric, it can be hard to find anything aside from the inexpensive Pellin, you know, very stiff interfacing, which does work well for some projects, but really learning about different types of interfacing that you can use. So not just, you know, the fusible interfacings that you can buy that are specifically made for that purpose, but even other fabrics you can use as interfacing. You can use silk organza as interfacing, and really learning how to pair your interfacing with your project and with your fabric can make a really, really big difference in the final look of your garment, I think.
Yeah, and just to touch back on the tools, I waited forever to buy an overlock machine, even as part of this industry, because I had one of the first ones way back in like the early 90s, and it wouldn't work no matter what I did, so I was so scared to buy a home overlock machine. But when I finally did, it was the biggest game changer, like in my sewing forever. It felt like manufacturing clothing, and then instead of just it going so slowly and, you know, zigzagging every edge. So, and they've really, really come down in price. I mean, I think mine was under $200.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can find them. Like the Brother, was it a Brother? The one we had in the office for a long time. The one everybody
we did
has,
one.
The 1034D or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, it lasts forever.
It does.
It's a workhorse.
It does.
And we not very expensive.
Juki now,
yeah.
I think, yeah. Okay, time for our second question.
Hi, my name is Grace, and my question is, can I add sleeves, remove them, or swap sleeves on a sewing pattern?
I can answer this one. We do get this one. I can confirm we get this question a lot, and it gives me anxiety every time. And that's only because I know how hard it is to fit a sleeve. It's not that it's impossible. It's just most often not the most efficient way to do it. Sleeve caps and armholes are drafted together as a pair for a specific design with specific style lines, and there's like a lot of factors that go into that, like where the shoulder seam is, where the underarm seam is, how much ease is built into the bicep is a big one, how much cap height there is, because that speaks to the lift of the garment, and if it's woven or knit, so many different things. So often what I tend to recommend is choosing a pattern that has a sleeve that you like and is close to your vision and altering that rather than just adding a sleeve. That being said, I know that's not always possible. I was thinking about this a lot, and I was actually thinking of the Emma dress again because that would be hard to, it took me long enough to get that fit right. That would be hard to take another pattern and be like, okay, I'm going to put princess seams on it. So, you know, if you've got a pattern and you're like, there's no way I can transfer all the other things to a sleeved garment, the next easiest thing is to choose a pattern that has the sleeve you want and that fits well, and copy the sleeve and the armhole to the one that you want. Things to look for there are, again, the shoulder slope, where that shoulder seam hits, you might have to make some adjustments. And we come back to muslining, definitely. It might take a few times to make that work.
Well, actually, I had a follow-up question for you, Robin, about that, which is, do you feel like it's easier to add a sleeve or swap in a sleeve with a certain sleeve style? So, for example, if you have a very gathered sleeve, does that make it easier to swap it in because you have a little bit more?
Yeah, so I've been thinking about that one a bit more, too. Since we last spoke, the gathered sleeve might be easier because you could make up. So, you know, you've got your front armhole and your back armhole, and there's a notch or a circle and your front sleeve cap and your back sleeve cap. And when there's the gathering there, it's easier because you could gather more or less to kind of make it fit, sort of fudge it in. I could definitely see that one being easier. I think a knit would be easier too, because quite often it's a very simple cap. And it can stretch a little bit to fit in. Other than that, I can't think of one that would be easier than the other. Again, because it comes down to the cap height, which is connected to the bias. The bicep, sorry. you know, you might have one. Your pattern that you're working with might be like a woven pattern with a longer armhole than the sleeve that you want to swap in. And so you have to check that cap height, you know? Mm-hmm. And if you do find yourself in that situation, I'm going to come right back to what I said in the pattern maker panel. Measure, measure, measure. Measure your front armhole. Measure your back armhole. Front cap, back cap. Note down what they are, how much ease is built in, because that can be really important, especially in woven garments. And when you're trying to fit the sleeve you want in there, you want to get those measurements exactly right.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a really good tip that if you if you do want to do this, although maybe it's not recommended by the pattern maker, if you do want to do this, to make sure that you're also tracing the armhole and you've got those as a pair rather than thinking about these as components that fit together willy-nilly. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that's really helpful.
Yeah.
Think about it that way.
Yes. And then the last thing when you're doing that, the armhole changes based on where that shoulder seam is too. Mm-hmm. You know, the farther out the shoulder seam, the more shallow that armhole is going to be.
Yeah.
So there's really like a lot of factors to consider it. And if it helps when we're drafting new patterns, if I have something with a sleeve, I always start with something with a sleeve. I never go to something without a sleeve, even if the design lines are similar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think it also goes back to what Sharon was saying earlier. You know the rules so that you can break the rules. And, you know, that's what sewing's all about, that you can try things.
Becky would totally break that rule.
Yeah. See if it works. I mean, that would be my philosophy. I would say, if you want to try it, try it. You know, just be aware that there might be issues you hadn't considered on the pattern making side of things.
Yeah. And it's totally normal to try and fail. I'm a huge advocate of failing. So
she is.
I really am. I really am. The more you do it, the more comfortable you are with it.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's a sock I've ever made that doesn't have a mistake or two or three.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think there's anything I've ever made that doesn't have a mistake or two or three.
Oh, yeah. All right. So now we're at our third question.
Hi, I'm Kathy, and I really resonate with this question, so I'm looking forward to the answer. How do I stop making mistakes while I'm sewing? Is it me, or is my sewing machine possessed?
I think it's possessed. Just knowing a little bit about you, Kathy, I think it's probably possessed. No. Well, I think, you know, going back to what we were just talking about, I think it's a great transition, because I don't think you ever stop making mistakes. And I think it's that expectation that you're going to get to a point where you're not making mistakes anymore that causes a lot of the frustration. And I've met a lot of people who sew over the last 15 years, and I think we do, a lot of us, have perfectionist tendencies. And I don't think they always manifest in the same way. I think some of us really want to make everything perfect, and I think others of us maybe want to make all the things, and that's how our perfectionism manifests itself. I think there are different ways that it shows itself, but that ability, or not ability, that tendency to see this gap between where you want to be and where you are right now, I think can cause a lot of frustration. And I think if you can start to live with that and be okay with that there's always going to be a gap, then I think that's where a lot of the learning comes in and a lot of the growth. And I think that's a big reason why most of us sew, is we enjoy that learning process and that growth process. So I think that's the first thing I would say. I'm not saying adjust down your expectations or anything. I'm just saying more on the personal level, like, it's okay to continue making mistakes for the rest of your life, and you probably will.
It's nice to know that we all do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the benefits of a sewing community and being in a place like this where you can talk to other people who enjoy the same hobby, is that you see that we're all in that boat.
Good enough is my favorite phrase.
Yeah. The other thing that I would mention, it's something that Haley and I talk about on the podcast a lot, which is that if you are struggling with something, then it's almost always either your tool or it's your technique. And if you can break it down to those two things, that makes it a lot more solvable. Because you know, okay, it's one of those two things. Is it either I'm using the wrong tool for the job, I need a better tool for the job, and that could include fabric, that could include your materials, or is it that I just don't know how to do the technique correctly yet, or I'm using the wrong technique. And once you have it broken down to those two things, I think it makes it feel a lot more easy to digest and easy to understand the next steps that you need to take in order to fix your mistake or to prevent it next time. And, you know, that's part of the learning process.
All right, now our fourth question.
I'm Jenny, and my question is, I want to make a woven sewing pattern in a knit fabric. Can I do that?
All right, that is a great question.
It's a good question for you, Robin.
All right, the short answer is it depends. I'm not going to yell at you like I am about the armholes. So let's break it down. You've got your woven and your knit patterns. So a woven pattern can very often be easily made with a knit fabric. The main consideration with that is the stability of your knit. So if you're working with something really drapey like a rayon jersey, you might need to take more ease out of the pattern to make that hang right. If it's more stable, like say a ponte, you'll need to take less ease out of that. I think a really good example of this would be the Darcy skirt from August. It's a wrap skirt. If you made that it's a woven skirt, and if you made it in a rayon jersey, you definitely would have to take a lot more ease out of that pattern. And it will hang differently than a more stable knit. So knit, if you're starting with a knit pattern, it's a little bit riskier to switch to a woven fabric. The main thing to consider in this scenario is how much ease is built into the pattern. If many knit patterns have negative ease. So if it's something like that, I won't say size up, but you will have to add more to, you can size up width-wise.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Now, there are other knit patterns, like our October jacket, Andy, which has a lot of ease built into it. It also has an elastic waistband, so you could very easily sub a woven fabric into that, and I think somebody just asked about that last week on the community. You could very easily sub a knit into that. I would go with a woven fabric into that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just as an example, I'm wearing a Dani dress right now, and this is designed for a woven fabric, and I made it in, this is actually a scuba knit. It's a like an ultra suede scuba knit from StyleMaker Fabrics, and I just love it. It's the awesome fabric. But I think with these types of fabric, scuba knits, ponties, like you mentioned, it's really, really easy to swap those into a woven pattern. And it's when you get into those drapier, stretchier fabrics where you start to run into problems. This is even lined in a woven non-stretch fabric. And nice. Because it has so much ease and because mm-hmm. the fabric is so stable, it doesn't affect it at all. So it really depends on the fabric.
Yeah, knit stability is mm-hmm. such a big thing. And I think somebody mentioned it in the pattern maker panel. When you're protoing, you want to mm-hmm. keep the knits the same too. You know,
yeah.
If you're making a muslin and doing it, definitely, if you can't use the fabric, the finished fabric that you want, definitely have something very similar as far as stability and stretch goes.
Yeah. I think that's something that a lot of us struggle with when it comes to knits, is that if you did want to make a prototype, you basically need to have the same, twice as much fabric mm-hmm. of your original fabric, because knits all perform so differently, mm-hmm. don't you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was just thinking of your spandex house.
Yeah. I had to make two donut shorts.
Twice the fun.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that I know I've definitely struggled with when it comes to sewing with knits, and getting the right fit is you don't know until you actually sew with it.
And some knits are so hard to sew with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, do you think there are certain types of knits that are just more reliable?
Probably. Probably. Ponties yeah. and French terries, although you can have a lot of different qualities of French terry.
Mm-hmm.
I know, because I shop for them for development fabric. But, you know, ponties are very stable,
yeah.
generally. French terries can vary. Anything with rayon, that's, you know, it's up in the air.
Yeah. Even with ponties, they can definitely vary, too. I have one at home right now that is... I bought it on Etsy, and when I got it, I was like, wow, this is barely a ponte. So you just never know.
Especially with Etsy.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things I was thinking about during the pattern maker panel earlier, is that so much of ready-to-wear is really based on the fabric choice. So that is a big part of the design. You know, you can kind of start with the fabric, and then you have to prototype it in that specific mm-hmm. fabric over and over.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this is a well-known fact outside of the industry, but they develop the fabrics first.
Right.
So they know exactly what they're using.
Mm-hmm. And that's a big difference in home sewing, is that, I mean, the beauty of it is we get to choose what fabric we're going to use, but that presents a lot of challenges that we then have to compensate for in different ways. So
absolutely.
Makes it a little bit more of a challenge, more tricky to...
A fun challenge.
Yeah, a fun challenge.
It's just part of that 3,000 piece puzzle.
Yeah.
Seamwork Radio is brought to you by the team at Seamwork. Seamwork's an online community that supports you in creating a wardrobe that feels right for you. When you join us at Seamwork, you become part of our private community of makers, and you also get access to monthly sew-along classes, a library of over 200 sewing patterns, and tons of great resources to help guide you through the sewing adventure that you choose. Podcast listeners can get half off a Seamwork Unlimited membership, which means you can download as many of those 200-plus patterns as you want at any time, and our community will be there to guide and support you. If you'd like to join us for half off, just visit seamwork.com/go/podcast50. You can also find us on Instagram at Seamwork or visit our YouTube channel, which is called Seamwork Video. We love hearing from you, so let us know if there's a topic or a personal story that you'd like us to cover. Thanks for listening to Seamwork Radio.